right, folks, we are back on the flagstick.com Tee Talk podcast, and this episode is sponsored by Ping Golf and the all-new Ping G425 lineup. Learn more at ca.ping.com. Stefan Tiedorf here with my co-host, the tired, the grumpy, the sunburnt Scott McLeod. How are you?
All of the above. it's that time of year when it's like, I don't know whether I'm coming or going, but that's okay. I expect it every year. Welcome to the golf industry. It's nothing new to you either. So
yeah, well, the Flagstick Open went off without a hitch. Great tournament as always. You know, nice to see you on the first tee. You threw me up on the Instagram for my opening tee shot right before I said I haven't gone over this water in the last 3 years on my first tee shot. And I went 2 for 2. You got the better of the two, that bunt swing just to get over there. The next day I still got over it, but I took a divot that was like 4 inches behind the ball.
And still got over.
Still got over.
Oh, sorry, yeah. I missed that one.
Yeah. Two just absolute great pars, very different ways. But yeah, just a great tournament overall. We'll get to that. And I don't know how far we need to get into my game. It was... You know, it was every bit as disastrous as it could be the second day. And it wasn't even because I wasn't hitting the ball well. It's just that windy. That might have been the hardest conditions I've played in a while.
Yeah, to be fair, the conditions were definitely challenging. To let people know, in the area that we were at, it was the record-setting day. It was the most rain on that date recorded since 1954. And we still managed to get it in. And that has to do a lot to the host golf course, Equinel, that was, drained properly and everything. Didn't have any delays. And then the wind came up beyond belief. Like, we're talking holding down tents, par threes that felt like they were playing par fives, getting extra officials out as spotters on some holes where there were lakes and ponds. The fact that everybody finished and endured and, you know, kept their patience pretty good too, considering, what they were facing, and the scores were going to be that much higher than normal.
Yeah. So on day two, I had 185, I think, into the green, and it was straight on the wind. And I nuked a 3-wood and came up short. Like, that's how windy it was. And I'm not the longest hitter. I think my 3-wood probably carries, 220 around there, 225. And yeah, absolutely nuked this thing, came up just short. And I was like, all right, this is what we're dealing with. And then, then just some bad tee shots where the wind just took them. And, I had this stretch that I've never done it before. I don't think I'll ever do it again, where I went triple quad. Then a birdie and then a double. It was just
that'd be good if you're an Olympic skater, but yeah. Not very good for a golfer.
It was just one of those stretches where just like nothing made sense. And it wasn't like, I said, one bad, like literally there was one bad shot in that stretch, and it was a tee shot on that, the quad hole. The one on the first triple, the wind literally just flew. Like, I aimed at the left side of the green. The pin was just left of middle. It flew the whole green hole all the way to and I was like, all right. And then the next one, okay, the wind's coming off the left. I play it off the left. It somehow doesn't. It hits the cart path, hits a tree, and then goes OB. It's like, all right, just one of those things. And then, luckily.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, luckily I had a good group. The guys, none of them were playing that well either, obviously. Yeah. And we just had fun and went around. And anyone coming up, not playing that well, I was like, no, but nobody cares. Nobody is going to care what I shot at the end of the day. I didn't really care. I was out having fun. Found it on the back nine, and outside of, two bad doubles on the back nine, everything felt kind of normal.
Yeah, we had 144 players, and we didn't see a lot of sour faces at all. A lot of people were just happy for the weekend to get it in, play the tournament. We're thankful for that, to be able to get it in. But you're right. I mean, some of those conditions, I was watching in the one par three, number eight. I happened to drive by there and just checking in with some of the spotters and stuff. And I watched this one tee shot, and it started on the right side of the green going over this lake. And it was probably... it looked like the tee shot was probably started 15, 20 yards into the lake. In the air, it covered the area back towards the green, past the green, and it ended up almost out of bounds on the other side of the green. So certainly a test. Had to make some course adjustments, obviously, for the second day, move around some tees and things like that.
Yeah, but, that was helpful.
So it was good. Long days, obviously. Great team that we had out there. But, we finished up Sunday night. I think I got home about 10:30 or so, finished up my wrap-up story around midnight, got that posted, and I was back on the lesson tee at 8:10 the next morning like a zombie. So
there's the tired and the sunburn.
Yeah. So unfortunately, you know, you miss out on a lot of other things that are going on, but it was good to see. And hey, it was good to see you live.
Yeah,
we don't see each other a lot these days. We hadn't seen each other in a while.
So I'll start there with one of my birdies. I'm going to give a couple this week. It just goes to the Flexic Open overall. All the volunteers, Jeff, yourself, all the rules officials, everyone, you know, in a good mood. I try to just go around and just chat with everybody when we're standing there. It got a little slow on the Sunday because, you know, people think they're trying to get a tour card and they slow down as they do. And it was difficult. It was very difficult. So
yeah, winds were gusting close to 60 Ks.
We were a threesome at one point. We became a twosome on the back nine. Those happened. And we just kind of chatted with the, you know, each marshal rules official we could see. It was a good time. So shout out to everyone. Thank you for putting on a great tournament. And shout out to our winner, Brendan Smith, local to the Kingston area. One of the first guys I ever caddied for him in a little city championship match play, and he ended up winning, I don't know, like
2013.
Yeah, like 12 on the 12th hole, he ended up winning at literally the furthest point on the golf course you could get. And I'm just like, come on, like this, couldn't you? Like, and then we walk all the way back. But yeah, nice to see, you know, try to go for pro.
Yep.
Didn't find it at that point, you know, just making it, making a go at it in the amateur golf. I text him after like 5 under day one is insane. Like with that, those conditions, I think he got the worst of the draw. I think the better it was pounding
rain when he played.
Pounding rain, pounding wind, 5 under. And I didn't even believe it. And, you know, just to show how good of a player he is, and still just knows, hey, you know, I'm an amateur player right now. It's just funny talking to him between the rounds. And he's like, you know, I haven't been in contention in anything in a long time. This is going to be weird. And nice to see him get it done overall.
Yeah. And it was kind of neat because, like you said, he lives in Kingston now, but he's originally from Ottawa. He's won some things here and there, obviously the city championships and club championships and things like this. And he was a late entry. He was one of the last few guys that got in the field, and he was thankful that he did, obviously. And one of the cool parts of his prize package included a G Clay print from Tony Harris, who's been on the podcast. And it turns out that it's his second Tony Harris, because he actually got a print when he won the club championship at Kanata years ago.
Wow.
So it was kind of neat, a little full circle moment for him, but a big finish for him. And he did well to hold off a good field. And yeah, thanks for mentioning that as well. I know you have another little part for your birdie here, but that sort of blends into my honorable mention. Those thank yous are really appreciated. Any event that you go to, a lot of the people that are there as volunteers are doing it for the good of the tournament more than anything. They're not looking for a lot of kudos. They're not looking for a lot of compensation. But every time a player comes by and gives them a thank you, it's a big boost for them. It lets them know that they're giving back to the game and what they're doing is worthwhile.
And it's lonely. They're just sitting there in the heat. Like the least you can do is just sit there and have a quick conversation and not ignore them. The only guy I was happy I never had to see was Rich. I didn't want to talk to Rich. Like I heard him on the radio a couple times. Like, no, don't get him near me. Anytime he comes around,
Rich
it's not
being
good.
The head referee. You don't want to see Rich. If you see Rich, there's a problem.
Yeah. So didn't have to see Rich at all. So that's a, that's a good thing. My other birdie, I'm going to go with Nelly Korda. I think you're very much on the same boat. Definitely. We'll kind of wrap up our talk on Flexic Open there, but picks up the win at the PGA. This girl is on fire right now. I'm looking at her stats for the year. There are two stats that she's not in the top 10. Top 12 on, if we wouldn't really need to get technical. Yeah. And that is sand saves and driving accuracy. Almost everything else, one. Okay, you know, CME Globe season one, official money list one. You're like, okay, that makes sense. She's won what, 3 times now, right? Okay, that's one thing. But scoring average, rounds under par, birdies, eagles, rounds in the 60s, subpar holes, like all these number one. Like he's just number one across the board. The season that she's having is insane. GERS, 6. Average driving distance, is 10th. It's driving accuracy that she's 71st. Like, just unbelievable. And she won me another bottle of wine on top of it.
And you know what? I mean, think about it too. She's now the number one player in the world for the first time for her. And, you know, well-deserved. A lot of times, a lot of people are just, you know, have discussions and arguments of whether number one rankings, especially ones that roll over a couple of years, are justified as far as the player actually being or should be the number one in the world. It's clear that she is the number one player in the world right now. And I don't think anyone can really dispute that.
No, it's great. I think back-to-back weeks too, just dialed in, gave a lot of credit to her family after the round. Obviously, you and I didn't get to watch much or any.
No, not at all, unfortunately.
So I'm kind of catching up afterwards. But, you know, I was keeping up with it Thursday, Friday, and was watching it then. And, you know, she was dialed in then and then kind of separated from the pack. And, yeah, just picks up a win. And just good for the game, down to earth. And said, gave credit to her sister, said, best big sister you could have, blah, 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 blah. Her mom was watching. Just really cool. It just seems like a very down-to-earth family.
I just started filing through the LCBO website trying to find wine. As soon as I saw her name up on the leaderboard, I'm like, I am screwed. There's no way she's not going to pack this or get this done. So.
Yeah, there's a bottle of wine, bottle of scotch. You and I traded our ones that we owed each other. I'm taking you to the bath at this point. Like, it's like each almost every week. I might need to find a way out here, Scotty. Here,
I might. I'm gonna have to buy out the contract.
The bookies are gonna. Yeah, gonna have to send some people after you. Outside of Nelly, you know, any thoughts on there for your birdie as well? You mentioned, you know, she was your birdie, but any other thoughts on Nelly?
Yeah, I mean, just I think attitude as well. I think what's neat about Korda is that she knows she grew up in a privileged family. She knew she had a lot of opportunities that a lot of other people didn't have. But she's very gracious and very humble, which I find really endearing. And I think that's a lot of why people like her so much. Certainly, you know, if you look at her background with, you know, her dad's success in tennis, for an example, and, you know, growing up in the spotlight, this is a person that could have a huge ego and be out of control. But I really appreciate her dedication as well. I saw a tweet right away, I think after she won at the Myers the week before, like the next morning, she's on the range, you know, grinding it out. You know, and that's a big deal for her, you know, to have that work ethic. She could be just, you know, just packing it in and just saying, nah, whatever, I'll just take it easy this week or whatever. But it's obviously that she's driven. She's putting in the work ethic and she's doing it very humbly, which I think is great.
Just under 1.8 million year to date. And we got a lot more to go. That's a lot of money on the LPGA. Like that is a big amount of money on the LPGA. So I don't know if she's setting records. I don't know what the record is for a year, but if she keeps at this pace, she might be getting close there. I mean, who knows? It could be 10 million. I could just be speaking in my.
Yeah. Well, especially with majors, you know, with an amount of majors and still left to play. Right. I mean, we get into the big events as far as the end of the year and clearly she has to be, you know, a contender every single week. And if she's not, you know, if she's not winning, she's in the mix. So every time she tees it up, she's just that good. So certainly, you know, while she's got only, I think that's 5 wins so far. She's going to tack on a lot more after this.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned your honorable mention. I'll go to mine. I think it ties into the rest here. Harris English is my honorable mention. And my honorable mention is I don't even know what I'm going to call it, but like I'm going to give it a phone call. And it's Captain Stricker needs to start calling this guy to talk about being on the Ryder Cup. He's obviously not on the team out of points right now, but this guy's having an amazing year. How much money do you think Harris English has made on the PGA Tour this year?
Oh, wow. I mean, obviously, we've been talking about his name a lot more than anything, but, you know, let's tack on this win. Let's put him at... I'll put him at 2.7 million.
Double. He's made 5.5 million.
Are you serious?
He has 2 firsts, a third, 7 top 10s, 10 top 25s. He's only missed the cut 4 times. This guy is he's dialed right in there. He's got a fourth in there in the U.S. Open, which from last year, like we got to remember this, that crazy wraparound season.
Yeah,
too, might have thrown you off, but you know, like he's just in it. He's been playing some of the best golf. We talked about when he first picked up that win in the in Hawaii, the Century Tournament Champions or whatever. That he, you know, he had just gone back to Ping a few years ago, and he was one of those guys that left and you know chased the money and kind of talked about it, you know, behind the scenes a little bit of like, you know. Probably don't do that. Like people have talked about it. Like, you know, you can make enough the money.
You can make the money on the golf course a lot more than you can make it off the golf course.
Goes back to Ping and he's having again, like some going back to those years, his best years, very much the same way where he was, you know, he would win a lot. Now he's just having that great year. So I think he's got to be in the mix. He's got to be in the mix. He's in that kind of Stu Sink territory of like, you know, these guys, they've been playing really well all year. Do they fit the mold of the team? What do we want right now? We have so many captains picks. What are your thoughts on should Stricker be picking up the phone?
Yeah, you know what? Here's a couple of things that will probably go in his favor. One, he did play in a Walker Cup back in 2011. He was a guy who was very strong in the team environment when he was at the University of Georgia. The other side, too, is that he's the kind of guy who, we'll call him a utility player. Doesn't matter who you pair him with, it's going to be good. And the issue sometimes, obviously, when we get these team environments is that we lose the team element. And generally, the critique for a lot of Ryder Cups is that it's been a compilation of superstars, whereas, you know, Europe, for an example, would, you know, be together a little bit more, have each other's back. Here is a chance to have a player that, you know, if you're the captain, you know, you can put him in anywhere, and so you don't have to manage the personalities, which is really a cool thing, as opposed to, you know, one player or another going, I can't put them together. There's just no way. It's not going to work. I don't think anybody would not match up with Harris English.
Well, he's currently eighth. So I don't know. Like, it's pretty hard. He just moved up five spots. So the top six are in, correct, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So you got to say Patrick Reed's in. Patrick Cantlay's right there. I think Tony Finau is playing his way off this team really quickly.
Sadly, right. Yeah. And that's probably because I was picking him for a couple of weeks for events. It's my fault.
You got to assume, if I look at the team right now, we're getting ahead of ourselves real deep.
Yeah,
like, we didn't plan to go down this conversation, but I kind of like it. But we'll you got to assume Patrick Reed's on this team. He's going to be on the team. And you got to assume Jordan Spieth's on the team, right? So there's eight, and they get 10, right? They get two more on top of that. Or is
it 12.
Correct? 12, sorry. So then Phil's one. So you're talking like three spots here. You rolled your eyes when I said Phil. There's like, I will bet you. You want to bet some wine?
No, I don't. I'm not.
We'll bet a winery.
I'm not
at this
touching
point.
Anything you do, betting on Phil Mickelson, good or bad.
Yeah, that's fair. I he's got to be on the team. And then you got this mix of like Cantlay and Berger and Webb Simpson, who's had success out there. Will Zalatoros.
What do you think? I mean, before you get too far there, what do you think of Cantlay in a team room? Like, is he going to say anything? Like, I mean, again, you know, he's got the skills and the ability, but, you know, if I've got a choice between a Patrick Cantlay and Harris English, I'm going English.
I mean, they're both kind of vanilla. If I got a choice between both of those guys and a Jason Kokrak,
well, I've seen more smiles on Harris English's face than I have on Patrick Cantlay.
But like, or like Billy Horschel, like there's a guy that's been sneaky. He's right in the mix. Like, I think this is going to be a very tough pick. Like, but it's crazy. The names that like you would have said like a year ago, if I would have told you at the end of 2020, hey, these names are probably not going to be on the team just from the way they're playing right now. Like Matt Wolf, for example, he was he was probably locked in last year at the end of 2020. We're talking Tony Finau, who's just like, the guy has the shanks. He's me. All of a sudden, like he can't.
Yeah, it's a totally different championship than would have been, you know, a tournament than would have been held in September 2020 versus what we're going to see this year. You're right.
Maybe we should go back once we get to there. Once the team's settled, we'll go and you and I will do some retro. If this actually played in 2020, what the teams we think would have actually been.
Yeah, sure. I like that.
That would be a fun game. I didn't think we were going down Ryder Cup talk. I think I'm getting excited, though.
Hey, why not?
But here we are. What's your par for the week?
Par for the week is me looking online and seeing a lot of people fretting over all the changes at Augusta National. Lots of, news outlets are showing, Google Earth photos and all sorts of things of changes that are going on at Augusta and worrying about, is 11 going to be changed the shape? Is 13, the back tee, going to be in play? You know what? Here's the thing. Changes are always going to happen there because they have the money to do it. And they're going to continue to keep doing that. And obviously, when we look at things like, post-pandemic, there's just going to be that much more appeal for people to travel and get to a place like Augusta National, because maybe they regret not doing it in the past and going, man, you know what? Who knows what's going to happen in the future? I'm going to have to do that. The people that are behind Augusta National will just keep making changes. So, there's nothing to worry about there. Yes, we can speculate how it's going to change the championship and what it's going to do. And I'm sure we'll talk about it as we go through. But, it's just a par for me. I mean, it's just going to happen. I'm not surprised by anything they're going to do anymore.
Does it not freak you out, though, just the
the scale?
The scale that they do things, right? And it's almost not even like... It just looks bigger. Like, they could be moving the smallest thing, but they could be like not liking the way the grass is slightly growing, and they'll pull it all out. And you see these aerial photos, and it's just dirt everywhere. And you're like, oh, my baby, like, what'd you do with it? And then like you get back there. I remember even last year, right? The same thing. You would see it even between DJ's win and wow, I just dropped a blank. Hideki's win there. Yeah. You saw those same aerial shots where, like, there's no grass in, like, two fairways. And what are they doing? And then you get there, it's like, how did they do this?
Yeah.
Like, there's something magical over there. I mean, we know that. But, yeah, I agree.
The magic is money. Money makes things happen.
It's a golf course that, like, in your lifetime, Scotty, you've watched a ton of Masters. Yeah. Like, what do you think is, like, the biggest change? Where you look at a hole now and you're like, this isn't even the hole I remember anymore. Because it really doesn't feel like anything has done that much other than lengthen to play the same way that it would have.
11's probably the one that's changed the most for me and is continuing to change just because it's very steep downhill. They've obviously continued to add length to that. I can remember early on being, let's say it was 465, didn't have the trees down the right side. Players could play to the right side and then have a good angle into the green from there. And then gradually they put the trees up on the right side, they put the tee back, and then they started to eliminate that access from the right so that players had to come across the pond. And now we're seeing them push it more and more left to make that more awkward. So it's probably the hole that's probably changed the most. The one that I'm surprised hasn't changed much is 13, which is probably the one that we are going to see some changes happen at some point. It's probably the one that's changed the most.
I just don't, I still don't think it needs to. I think the only difference, like, the hole hasn't really changed that much how they play it. Like, I don't know if the scoring average has changed. Of that stats. I didn't think we were going to talk Ryder Cup either.
I think that's more weather dependent more than anything. I don't think that's player dependent. Cause I mean, even you look at, Tiger Woods in 97 and how he dominated the golf course. Do we need to do it? I mean, no. I mean, I guess that comes down to ego in most cases. They're trying to protect it so that in case you get a year where things are soft and the players tear it apart, then somehow the bruised egos at Augusta National will feel like, we're not a championship test anymore or whatever. You know what? Let the players decide. It's already a fabulous golf course. Mm-hmm. You don't have to trick it up that much more. I want to see roars on the back nine. I want to see players, tearing
apart. I want an eagle on 13.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't want to all of a sudden go, oh, hey, some guy won the Masters. He shot one under on the back nine. I mean, I don't want the drama to come from players making bogeys and double bogeys.
Not Augusta.
Right? Yeah. Not at Augusta. You want them to tear it apart. You want somebody to shoot 30 on the back nine and make something happen to win it.
I like it. Just quick par for me. 8-hole playoff on the PGA Tour. The same hole over and over. I'm glad I wasn't watching.
Me neither. I would have fell asleep. I would have been confused.
It's not even like the best hole out there. They have that great drivable par 4. Like,
yes,
I know it's 15. A little bit further away. Card them over there. I know it's hard. You got to bring all the fans there, whatever. But like, that would be fun. Just doing the same hole. That's the hole with the road in the middle, right? Or the cart path throughout the middle.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's just same thing as driver wedge, driver wedge, driver wedge. And they did that for 8 times and just kind of like, meh, right? Maybe you thought it was exciting because it went 8 holes. Like that should be exciting, but it should be exciting because like it went 8 holes of different golf. Like maybe we went to a par 3 and all over the place. That would be way more fun. Do it on that boring par 4.
I agree. The long playoffs, I mean, or change the format, you know, change it in essence so that it's not, you know, maybe it's not sudden death. Maybe
do an alternate shot and your caddy has to hit shots.
You know, that might not be a bad idea, really, to make something happen. Just do something different. Have them pick one club and go with one club. I don't know.
That'd be fun.
You know,
yeah.
But, you know, and also you got to understand that, you know, what happens is all of a sudden, you know, you go into an 8-hole playoff. That's a nightmare from a TV coverage standpoint. I mean, it's way all of a sudden.
We got gymnastics waiting. We got to.
Exactly. All of a sudden, it's outside the broadcast window. And I know they've got web and streaming stuff that they can access now and things
Peacock
like that.
Peacock or whatever they
can. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's just like, oh, okay, let's find a way that we can get this done maybe a little bit faster, more dramatically, and more standardized. And, you know, the players too have got to be bored to death after a while, especially playing the same hole over and over.
Yeah, it's just dull. What's your bogey for the week?
My bogey for the week actually comes from a discussion on the weekend. I was having a discussion with a marketing director for a private club, and we were just talking about the favor train. And the fact is that most golf courses are really, really busy right now. And a lot of things in the industry are busy. And people somehow can't read the room. You know what? This is not the year to be asking for free green fees. Free loops of a golf course for somebody that you're not maybe doing something for from a value standpoint, and have the understanding that, you know what, everybody's asking for, you know, hey, can you expedite my golf clubs, you know, because they're 8 weeks behind for the manufacturer. So everybody just relax a little bit with the asking for the favors. You just put unnecessary pressure on people, and you're not really building any goodwill for the future when you really want to play, or the person can provide access or things like that. So you're basically ticking them off.
Yeah, it's tough out there. There's, you know, things, getting clubs is hard.
Yeah.
Everything's delayed. I actually was looking up, I forget what it was. It was a driver head that is delayed till October. And it's one of the most popular models currently out there right now. And they're freaking out, but at the same time, they're reaching record numbers, like from a manufacturer's standpoint. And it's like, but I love that they're freaking out, because at the end of the day, the customer's not happy that they can't buy this club. And now we've sold out of what we thought we were going to anyway, but people are loving it so much and we want to get into people's hands. How do we get them to hold on to the new model till next year? It's such a give and take. It's a hard year. So I love that. Give patience out there. And if you're not giving back, then, you know, relationships have to go two ways. Let's say that. So
yeah, definitely. Like, and that's a good way to put it. You know, and that goes whether you're a golf pro media member or whatever the case may be, you know, calling up somebody right now who's got a tee sheet, especially at a private club where maybe, let's say for an example, they've got 400 members and they've only got 300 tee times a day. And then you're pressing them to see if you can get out on their golf course. Guess what? Their priority is the member right now more than anything.
There you go. I'm going to leave it as a bogey, but it's a positive bogey. I got a final bogey here, and it's the unknown of Shan-Chan Fang. And,
yeah.
And did we just watch her last tournament ever on U.S. soil? Is she retiring? Just one of those women in golf that apparently is just hilarious, mm-hmm. has, you know, that personality. I know our buddy Dez has said in groups before, you know, been out there with her, and she just doesn't stop making everyone laugh. She used to wear cow pants, and she said, you know, they call me a cow, I may as well dress like one. Like, she's so funny. She just off cover. And when she came back from quarantine, she said she'd wake up, think about what I'm going to eat. Then I'd think about what I was going to eat for lunch. And then after I was done lunch, I'd think about what I was going to eat for dinner. Like, just like one of the people we want in the game. And it's, and I think people think that's what she's known for. No, this is a major champion. 10 mm-hmm. wins on the LPGA Tour, 7 ladies European Tour wins, 7 LPGA of Japan Tour wins, which is a big tour over there for big the time. Women, bigger than the men's tour. Just one of the awesome people in the game. And I think she just said, you know, different priorities right now. I'm going to play. Yeah. And she's like, maybe I won't. Maybe I won't retire. Like, it just seems like her. I think it'd be a huge bogey if for the game if she did leave. And just unfortunate. That's one, when people are like, who's somebody you really want on the podcast? Like, I would love to have her on the podcast. I think we'd be dying laughing the whole time.
Yeah, I think what we call that is a selfish bogey, because it's like, yeah, we're happy for her. Right. Yeah. It's sort of like Lorena Ochoa when she retired. I mean, you know, you want her to be around. You want to watch her career bloom and blossom. But, you know, it's the game the way it is. And it's going to be always harder, I think, on the LPGA side versus the PGA Tour side, because we have, we have a lot of women that maybe, all right, I'm going to be dedicated to my family in a different way, or have children or whatever. Or, you know what? The other side of it is the riches are just not there on the LPGA side as far as the attraction is concerned. And a lot of people, it's a grind. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. If you were touring professionally, it is a grind. And I certainly, you know, if someone decides to pack it in and pursue something else, I certainly don't, I don't blame them for that. It's not as glamorous as people think it is. So, good luck to her. And hopefully it is not the last time we see her.
No, but you touched on that, becoming, focusing on family. And, we try not to plug other podcasts, but go and listen to No Laying Up with Stacey Lewis this week. Just a great podcast about, becoming a mother and the choices of doing that versus their career and why she did and why she even came back and all that. Like, she's had a life, and it just brought me a whole different perspective on her. Cause when I see Stacey Lewis, she always looks just pissed all the time too. And I just thought she wasn't like, I just wouldn't
play her in match play. Let's just say that.
So. I was like, I don't think this is going to be entertaining. It was very good. But when you were talking about, Shan Chen, I thought about someone like Michelle Wee. Remember when she left and said she's kind of retiring, and we were all kind of bummed out, and she took a couple years off. She just made the cut at the PGA. Mm-hmm. 77 first day, not looking good. She throws out something on Instagram or tweeted about it. Next day throws out 69, finished T46. Like, this is, these are the people we want in the game. So if she does take a break or she does retire, I hope she does come back. She's great for the game.
Yeah, I think the career cycle just looks different in some aspects, and I wouldn't be surprised. I know some highly known players that I've talked to before that, when you talk to them about how long they're going to stay in the game, it's not as long as you might think it's going to be. So don't ever be surprised if someone just decides to pack it in and change the path they're going to go on. Stacey Lewis, great example too, from a health perspective.
Scoliosis.
She it's a big impact for her. She enjoyed when she had her time off, she enjoyed helping out with some coaching, with some different programs and stuff like that. It's just perspective of life. And I think you're going to see more players making changes because of last year, because of COVID, because of the situation where there was a schedule that was only half as long. A lot of players had more time off last year on the LPGA Tour, Symetra Tour, various tours, and they maybe discovered that their life is not fully defined by golf. And as a result of it, that maybe opens their eyes and change their plans a bit. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see in the next few years that some major players that are generally playing the game right now look to move on to something else.
For sure. So last week, Scotty, I interviewed Chase Koepka. You weren't able to make it. You have an interview this week that I wasn't able to make. Who do we have this week, Scotty?
Yeah, Todd Kierstead is going to join us. Todd is well known in Canada. Originally, he's a PGA of Canada professional, originally known as a trick shot artist, but then developed a business that really looked at helping other people come back to the game and anybody that had any type of disability. And then he's expanded that now to create an organization called Paragolf Canada that is really providing opportunities for all sorts of people to come to the game who maybe didn't think they had an opportunity to either keep playing the game or take up the game in the first place. So I think you'll find it insightful as far as his vision of what he's going to do and how he's going to help change the game of golf.
At Ping, our culture of curiosity has been driving innovations for over 60 years. Innovations like the new G425 iron, which brings you greater distance without sacrificing the forgiveness and control you need to play with precision. And with free access to the Arcos Caddy system, you'll play smarter and shoot lower scores. The new Ping G425 iron, better by every measure. Get fit today.
Visit ca.ping.com to learn more about G425.
All right. I'd like to welcome good friend Todd Kierstead to the podcast here. Going to have a little coffee, a little chat with Todd, catch up with him. For a lot of people, if they're not familiar with Todd, very prominent in Canada and around the world, involved with a very special aspect of golf. And I'll let him explain that more. But Todd is a PGA of Canada member and happy to have him on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love being on here.
Yeah, you know what? You know, we've talked a lot over the years. You've definitely expanded golf for a lot of people in the country. And I think we'll pull that thread a little bit and talk a little bit about it because, you know, you've introduced a new initiative. You've been very active in a specialized area of golf. And again, you can explain that, but you've expanded on it heading into this year. So why don't you give people a little bit of your background of what you've been doing in your career and where it's headed right now?
So my background, you know, I've been a PGA professional for over 20 years. And for the last probably 18 years, I've had the amazing privilege of traveling around the world, helping raise a lot of money for different charities, different organizations through golf entertainment, through trick shots. I got voted trick shot of the year on the Golf Channel, then on ESPN Sports Illustrated, TMZ, but not in a scandalous fashion. I've been on TMZ four different occasions with hitting golf balls with different celebrities. And then back in 2016, I did a demonstration for a veterans hospital just outside of Tampa, Florida. And it became apparent really quickly that a lot of the shots that I was hitting for pure entertainment value, they were actually emulating the wounded veterans that were in attendance. So I was hitting golf balls blindfolded. There were individuals that were affected by mustard gas in the Vietnam War and lost their sight. I was hitting golf balls swinging with one arm. There were arm amputees. I was hitting balls standing on one leg. There were leg amputees, hitting golf balls off my knees, double leg amputees, and hitting golf balls out of a Costco fold-out chair. And there were guys that were in a wheelchair that suffered horrific accidents and situations due to their time in the theater of war in Afghanistan or Iraq. So it became apparent immediately that a lot of these shots that I was hitting throughout the years for pure entertainment value with the right audience, it became a motivation and inspiring tool for them to show them that, yes, maybe they can't play the game of golf the way that they used to before their injury, but I was showing them an adaptive way to play the game of golf again. So it immediately turned the light bulb on for me. So I came back up to Canada and I started doing an adaptive golf program in the Toronto area. It got supported by Adidas Golf Canada with Leslie Hawkins and David Bradley from TaylorMade. Then from there, it just exploded. So I started an adaptive program in 2016. Then 2017, the Invictus Games rolled around in Toronto, which was the Prince Harry Initiative, where 550 athletes came to Toronto, 17 countries to compete. And they introduced golf as a sport at St. George's Golf and Country Club. And there was nobody really doing adaptive golf in Canada at that time. So they pulled me in as part of the competition supervisor, helped write the rules, did site inspections, but spent time actually on the golf course with Prince Harry for about 45 minutes talking to him about the power of golf and how it was helping wounded veterans transition into their civilian life. From then, I got asked to be part of the Warrior Games back in 2019 down in Tampa, Florida, which is the Warrior Games is what inspired Prince Harry to do the Invictus Games. The Warrior Games are wounded veteran games for wounded American soldiers, all branches, the U.S. Army, Marines, Air Force. And then Prince Harry saw that and started the Invictus Games. So I was with that in 2019. So things kind of taken off from there. Then with COVID, wasn't able to travel around the world doing the adaptive stuff and the entertainment stuff. And I thought, you know what, let's start a brand new initiative for a national program, a national golf program for adaptive golf. And it's called ParaGolf Canada. And it's really near and dear to my heart. And it really encompasses a lot of great things that are happening right now in the game of golf.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing an explosion there in the game of golf with people who maybe didn't think they could play or maybe didn't think they could be accepted in the game. And obviously, that's the forefront that you've been working on. We're now seeing a world ranking for, you know, disabled golfers, which is fantastic. We've got some common friends, obviously, Curtis yeah. Barkley, who, you know, plays in our tournaments and obviously is a, you know, a world level athlete. And Tom Martineau as well, who's been on this podcast, yeah. who you know, obviously from the Invictus Games. But, you know, this is the emphasis. How big is the market for this, and I don't mean market from a commercial sense. How many golfers are out there who, you know, or are potential golfers who just maybe don't think they can play because of certain, you know, disabilities? And I hate that word, so no, I prefer abilities.
The demographic is huge. And right now, you know, you have great associations like Blind Golf Canada, you have the Canadian Amputee Golf Association. But a market that really hasn't been tapped into is, so what I've done is I've created a pathway for Canadians of all abilities to advance in golf. So with Paragolf Canada, what we do have is we have a grassroots program where we're introducing individuals into the game of golf that, as you said, that may have not thought they could ever play the game of golf again, or never thought golf was an option due to their situation. Then I have a national playing program, and that's where players that are very comfortable with being on the golf course already in adaptive situation, all the way up to a national team. And I mean, you've talked about a few people already, but I've got the best golfers right now in Canada, and some are the best golfers in the world that are part of Team Canada. But the great thing about it is I've got a classification program, and what the classification program does is it creates a very equal playing field. So the classifications that I have, there's limb deficiency, which is your leg amputees, your arm amputees. I have neurological and coordination, which falls into the category that really hasn't been tapped into. And that's getting into, you know, stroke patients. That's getting into multiple sclerosis, cerebral palsy. There's not really an organization out there for them. So that's encompassing them. Then we've got the intellectual, which falls into your autism spectrum, your Down syndrome, your Fragile X syndrome, things like that. I put together a first responders and military because it's near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. But you also have seated golfers, which is individuals that are playing from a wheelchair, as well as your shortened stature, which is where Curtis Barkley falls into. Yep. So with creating classifications, it's allowing individuals to be classified based on the situation that they're in. So it's creating a flair playing field, because when you get into an event and you just group all adaptive golfers together, you know, you take a look at a lower leg amputee that's a plus two handicap competing against somebody that is either blind or somebody that's in a wheelchair or has severe cerebral palsy. It just doesn't create a level playing field. So with the classification, we're also able to do a ranking system, which is now classifying the golfers, then taking their previous scores. So we're giving them benchmarks on where they sit and what they need to do to improve to get to the next level. So it's a pretty in-depth process, but it's giving the community, as I said, benchmarks, but it's creating a fair and equal playing field with the classification system.
And do you think there's always been we'll call it a lack of a magnet for all these people to go to? I mean, I think one of the biggest things is that, you know, in talking to Curtis in the past, that, you know, he felt sort of like an outlier. And then all of a sudden, when you discover this community, it just, I guess, one, you find out there's more people that are like you, that are, you know, playing the game, that love the game. And then, you know, you have people that are going to support you. And I guess it motivates those players to play more and to be involved with the game that much more.
Well, that's the thing about it. You know, when you let's take, for instance, a recent individual that just suffered a stroke that has possibly lost, you know, the one side of their body. You know, they don't think, first of all, they have to get over the mindset that, you know, there's the anger, the frustration, the depression of, oh my God, why me? Yeah. Then all of a sudden, they think the game that they've played throughout their whole life, that they love, that their personal relationships, their entertainment, their going out with friends, their social aspect of the game is ripped away from them. But if you can then provide them with the support to say, hey, you're not alone. Here's some other individuals that maybe play the game of golf, not the way that you used to, but here's an adaptive way to play the game of golf. So it may only could be for an individual being out on the golf course for 4 to 5 hours for 18 holes, but maybe only hitting 10 shots. But you know what? They're having 4 or 5 beers with their friends. They're enjoying the laughter, the social aspect of the game of golf. And that to me is what's so important, is giving people a purpose again.
Yeah, I mean, that purpose is obviously very important. And, you know, these are people that love the game just like we do. And as we know, there's a lot of different ways to play the game. And I guess people have to realize that there's just not one path in the game of golf. And what you're doing is you're providing more opportunities more than anything.
Absolutely. To me, I just want to create a resource center, and I want to bring all these associations that are doing incredible things to the same table, because they're doing great things. They're working though in silos, and they always have. And bringing them together, like last night I had a meeting with four different associations that were in the call, and it was the first time that they've really ever spoken to each other, and now bringing them all together. And the great thing about having this classification and a ranking system is when we start putting on events, we can have different flights, and each flight with their handicap index, there could be all different classifications of golfers competing against one another. There could be a blind golfer, a seated golfer, a limb deficiency golfer, all competing, but they're at the same level where they've never had that opportunity before.
Yeah, I can remember doing an article years ago just talking about the acronyms of who the different associations were in Canada. One, I discovered a lot of associations that I didn't know about. Two, I had all sorts of phone calls that people were going, what? There's an association regarding that? And people should realize in Canada, there's a long history of adaptive golf. And, it may not have been formalized, but if we look in our Canadian Golf Hall of Fame, Claude Pattimore, who is in there, was a blind golfer, a world champion, born in Athens, but grew up in the Hamilton area. So, we have a history of golfers competing and doing things, but again, it just hasn't had the spot. Now, one thing that's providing you a little bit more support is that you've got a really good board, an advisory board, also some strong sponsors as well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who has been helping you, kind of get behind this initiative?
Well, on a sponsorship level, as I said before, Adidas has been absolutely incredible with Leslie Hawkins. She and her team have provided so much support, so much so that I took a handful of adaptive golfers to the Manulife Classic a couple of years ago, the LPGA event. And we were there for 2 days. We had range time with the players. The players all came over and were incredibly accommodating, even though they were in their practice round. And then we stood on a hole, a par three hole. And when each group came through during the practice round, we were hitting shots with them. And Addy ended up making a great documentary video on that. TaylorMade has been absolutely incredible and supportive with product to help out a lot of these golfers, because a lot of them are on fixed incomes, and being able to provide discounts and free product has been incredible. A couple of years ago, Clublink jumped on board. They saw the opportunity to allow more golfers onto their property, growing the game of golf, where, it's been sometimes a little bit challenging to get tee times for individuals as a group together. So Clublink's come aboard. Then with the advisory board, I've got everybody from Canadian IOC members that are on the Olympic committees all the way to great ambassadors from the game of golf, different athletes. It's just people, A, love the game of golf, and B, see the opportunity to help so many people with the game of golf through Paragolf Canada.
So what are the plans for this year going forward? Obviously, we're still in a pandemic, so we still have some challenges as far as what you can and can't do. But, what would be the slate of things that are happening this year, and what would be things that you're looking forward to doing in the future?
Well, right now we're growing the membership base. Right now I already have a database of over 500 golfers all over the country that have competed. And we just went public a week ago.
Yeah.
I have a database of over 500 golfers that have competed in their own adaptive programs, whether it be CAGA, whether it be the blind golf, whether it be hearing. We're actually I'm in development stages right now, putting on a Paragolf Canada virtual open. The great thing about that is the virtual golf tournaments have become pretty big with the lockdowns and with COVID and the group gatherings. But the thing about the virtual event is there's so many restrictions due to travel and getting all Canadians to one golf course to hold a national event or hold even a provincial event, being able to do it virtually, being able to do it without any geographical boundaries. We're going to be including people all across the country in a week-long event where they're able to play 2 days anytime in that week and create a virtual open, do classifications, do flighting, and just having a lot of fun. And it's just almost like a participation to grow the game. on a national level as much as we can. So that's going to be happening the end of August. It's the Paragolf Canada National Virtual Open. So it's going to be bringing a lot of people, hopefully, out of the woodwork that play golf that may not think that they are a paragolfer.
Right.
You know, I mean, those stroke patients, those individuals that might not think they could play a competitive round. We're going to set it up as a stroke play and also a Stableford system so they can choose how they want to participate, which will make the game a lot easier and more friendly for everybody. But the great thing about it is there's no geographical boundaries anywhere in Canada. People can play on their home golf course.
And are you expecting to do, you know, more in-person events in the future and the years ahead? I mean, obviously, you know, it's early in the stages. I'm sure you've got a grand vision for everything that you'd like to do. And knowing you, it's probably a very deep, long list. You know, what are the realistic levels of things that you're going to be able to do in the next little while?
You know, the great thing, I think what we're going to try and do right now is accomplish is get, you know, for this program to be successful, we have to have buy-in from the stakeholders, all the stakeholders in golf, the governing bodies, provincial, national, because one day I truly believe golf is going to be a Paralympic sport. Golf is already in the Olympics, but, you know, there's rumblings that either 2028 or 2032. And for that to happen, Golf Canada has to be involved with being the national governing body. And basically what I'm doing is handing them a silver platter. And here is a complete grassroots development program all the way to your national team already selected. And to get buy-in from all the stakeholders for this to be included, the National Golf Course Owners Association, getting more golf clubs adaptive friendly, getting more pros on board with being able to host clinics, introductory or just lessons and things like that. And it's just raising the awareness that there's so much, and you hit it right on the head. You hate using the word disability because mm-hmm. there's so much ability in these individuals. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's taking, you know, making it more of the norm to see somebody playing golf that is missing a limb, or making it more of a norm that somebody's in a wheelchair playing golf. And yeah, I understand that the golf community, the two things that a golf course is looking at when somebody's coming in an adaptive situation is pace of play and course conditions. And if we can stress that to our members, there's going to be no problem with everybody getting out on the golf course.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I've been a big advocate for, I won't call it adaptive golf, but just getting everyone involved. And, you know, I had a good friend, Rick Buck, who's a Special Olympian, yeah. come to the GJAC Golf yeah. Journalist Association Canada event with me last year and took him out and played with, you know, a couple of prominent people. And they were like, wow, okay, this guy can really yeah. play golf, right? And, you know, it wasn't yeah. a case of, you know, it's some fringe sort of thing. This is a golfer. You know, this is somebody yeah. who just loves the game. They just happen to be in a different situation than a lot of other people.
Absolutely. And you know, Rick's a great ambassador for the Special Olympics. He's traveled all over the world with the classification that he's in, and as you said, he's one of the best golfers. We have one of the best, well, the number one ranked blind golfer in the world right now is from Canada. We have another individual that has won in a year the South African, the US and the Canadian amputee national championship. There are some great golfers that if people didn't look at them that yeah. they have a disability, they can compete on any stage. And we yeah. see it with Curtis. Curtis is now going to be going into the English Open and the Hero Open yeah. Upcoming in another couple of weeks. So he's going to be on a world stage, and there's so many great Canadian golfers that are out there that I want to make it the norm to see people on the golf course that are in adaptive situations, as opposed to, you know, being stared at all the time. And that's what we do. There's a little bit of difference here on the golf course. And I always say to the individuals that are in adaptive situations that are feeling frustrated because they're looked at with a magnifying glass, I say, what happens when you see somebody that is beautiful from the opposite sex? You stare at them because yeah. they're different. And right. I go, you're right now different and people are looking at you, but they're, it's amazing what's happening. It's motivating to me. It's inspiring to me. It's powerful for me when we're able to take a golfer that has never thought they could ever play the game of golf again and get them enjoying the sport again in their own way, not the way that they used to play,
right.
but in an adaptive way. And that's so powerful.
Yeah. So one last bit there, you know, you mentioned as far as the associations, the facilities, you know, the pros, what are the specific challenges? Because I know for myself as a PGA professional, you know, if I haven't had a lot of experience with adaptive recreation, I'm fortunate I have, my background is recreation. But I can imagine that is going to be a challenge. If someone who, you know, plays in part of the Para Golf Canada Association says, I want to go get a golf lesson, they might not have the best situations provided for them. Is that something you might be able to provide as well?
So what we're working on right now is we're going to be starting a training program with different PGA professionals that are interested in growing their knowledge on the adaptive world. We're going to be starting programs, facilitating them with different rehab individuals, with physiotherapists. Think about it, as a PGA pro, we all know how to teach the golf swing. But the thing about it is we don't know the physical situations of a person. The first thing I did when I got into adaptive golf is I had a prosthetic, I'm able bodied, but I had a prosthetic leg made for myself, bent at a 90 degree angle. And the first thing that happened when I started hitting golf balls with that prosthetic leg on is I wasn't trusting the prosthetic leg to support my weight. So my good leg, my able body leg, was supporting all the weight throughout the golf swing. Well, within 10 swings, the lactic acid took over in that leg, and my butt cheek was on fire. And without being put into that situation, or without hitting golf balls in a seated position, without hitting golf balls from off my knees and things like that, you have to put yourself in the situation for you to relate what the individual is going through. And some people in the adaptive community, I've had some able-bodied people that think they're doing good and have reached out to me saying, Todd, we don't think it's good that you're putting yourself in that position. It's a bad look for the individuals. And the individuals are coming out to me going, it's amazing that you want to put yourself in my position so you can then teach me. So it's putting people, able-bodied people, in the situation, A, for empathy. Like if we get a family member that has lost a leg, and I put them in that prosthetic leg, now they can relate what the individual is going through. So now there's a bit of empathy there. Plus, you're putting yourself in that same situation, so you now know what's going on physically. So you can start teaching them and working with them, because it's basically a lot of communication. When I get somebody that's in an adaptive situation for a golf lesson, I'm looking at a good golf swing like we all do. And we're going to try and push the envelope as far as we can with that person to try and get him in the best golf swing possible. And it has to be a very, very open communication and a lot of trust.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, you know, it's amazing what you're doing. I really respect everything that you're doing, for sure. Where can people catch up with Para Golf Canada, find out more about it?
It's paragolfcanada.com. So it's pretty easy to find. We're all through social medias right now. We're growing it right now on social media as well. But paragolfcanada.com, it outlines everything that we're doing, from the grassroots development program to the national team, to all the classifications and the ranking program. It lies it out there for everybody. It's on a silver platter, really. It really is. That's what I tried to do for everybody.
Awesome. Well, you know what? I'm glad we're able to talk about it today on the podcast, for sure. Best of luck with everything that you're doing, and certainly happy to support anything you're doing as well.
Scott, thank you. Thank you, Flagstick, for the platform. You guys have been incredibly supportive of the adaptive golf and what I've been doing over the years. And I can't thank you enough for the platform to get the message out there.
Thank you, Todd, for that interview. Nice, insightful way of getting people back to the game, as you highlighted, and, you know, sounds like a good guy. Hopefully next time I'll be around for that interview.
Yeah, he's a passionate guy, and I certainly hope you get to meet him sometime and get a sense of his energy as well. You know, he works so hard to make the game better for other people and to take on tasks and things that maybe a lot of people would ignore. And he really takes them head on. And I really respect him for what he's doing. And I think it's fantastic how he's going to change the game of golf.
I like it. We are now at the Detroit Classic this week, the Rocket Mortgage tournament, which was new last year, right? That was brand new. 2 years ago it was new.
2 years ago when Doc Redman won it.
Doc Redman, right. Yeah. And then
there's a name. I just pulled that up because I saw it the other day and went, oh, is that guy still on tour?
I don't know. Well, yeah. He won. Yeah, he's got to be. But had that hot little stretch there. Bryson's defending. This was last year when we first saw him do his kind of bomb and gouge. And it's a golf course he can do it at, right? Like you can hit the golf ball anywhere at this golf course. It sounds crazy. I really like him to defend this week. I think he's annoyed. Mm. They've been talking about him a lot. That back nine at the U.S. Open, but. Is he tired? I think this is his fourth week in a row playing, if I'm not
mistaken. But he finished T17 last week, so he was showing some form. And, you know, he's the kind of guy, though, that if he goes back to an event that he's won before, I think he in his mind, he owns that place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's the guy who thinks that.
What'd you think of his comments? I don't think we ever touched on it, about the U.S. Open. And his presser after, he mentioned, and I just saw it, it stuck out to me the second time I heard it. He said, you know, I already got one of these, so I'm not too worried about it. I'm over it. And this was like right after he had that 44 on the back nine Sunday. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Because I didn't think anything of it at the time. I was just kind of watching Shane Bacon on Golf Channel, and he had a great point. He's like, if that's the case, don't show up anymore. Like, why are you coming to any other U.S. Open? If you just want one, well, you got your one. Why are you here?
Yeah, I think he was just deflecting for the fact that, you know, he had played poorly and was disappointed and he kind of didn't want to shine anything on it. But I don't think it should just be a notch in your belt that you win each one once and then you're over with. I mean, it may not have the exact same meaning for the fact that you haven't attained that goal of winning the U.S. Open, but saying that and minimizing it, I think that's just trying to, you know, play it off as, oh, well, it didn't really matter as much to me or whatever, so I didn't put in as much effort or whatever. So I agree with Shane on that. If that's the case, then, you know, why are you entered? I mean, are you not entered to win the championship? I get it. Some people will probably go to a tournament and maybe don't think they're going to win, and their goal is maybe just to make a nice check. It's definitely odd. That's for sure.
Yeah, very odd. Matthews in the field this week, Gliggs in the field, and David Hearn back in the field on the PGA Tour this week. So, Rocket Mortgage Classic. Do you want to? You want to pick a player? You don't want to pick any player?
I haven't really even looked at the field. I mean, one of the things that's nice, though, with Gliggs back there, I see Gareth Rafflesky, who, you know, obviously was on the podcast, is getting back out there and going to, you know, sneak across the border. Well, not really sneak, but go across the border and get back to work. And as far as PGA Tour support, I know he hasn't been out there in a while, but, you know, I haven't dug deep in the field. And I think both of us are probably going, oh, well, let's go with DeChambeau. Although I see Ricky Fowler's back in the featured groups.
Well, he's rocking mortgage guy, right?
So, of course.
I don't think we need to pick players. There's a couple guys that I'm looking at for good weeks, though. Cam Davis at 111. So I don't know what his top 10 odds are, but that seems high. Joel Damon, 126. That seems high. Ooh. Mackenzie Hughes at 126. Like, these are guys that are, you know, they might, like, Mackenzie's in good form, clearly. Joel Damon, it's been 6 weeks, not even, since he won.
Yeah.
You know, Cam's like coming off a great couple of years where he's right in the mix there. So the fact that they're that high, I might have to look to sprinkle some top 10 numbers in there. Mm. Your boy Cameron Champ at 151-1. You know, it's
Kramer Hickok coming off the the playoff loss. I mean, he's finally rounding into form. So, I mean, I don't know what he's going at right now, but I definitely wouldn't ignore that. Although he might be tired from the 8 extra holes.
Of these guys that are 1,001 to 1 to win, who makes the cut?
I haven't looked at that.
Actually, before, tell me who finishes highest. You don't have to say makes the cut because I'm sure a couple of them will. So we got Hunter Mahan. Ooh, Matt boy. Every, Michael Kim, Willie Mack, Martin Trainer, Nick Watney, Connor Arndell, Timothy O'Neill, Daniel Wetterich, and then we got two more that Daniel are even higher.
Qualified, yeah.
We have a Harrison Fraser at 1,501.
Oh, did Harrison Fraser get in there?
And a Jeff Roth.
Jeff Roth won the 2,500. He won the Michigan PGA sectional, and that's how he got in there. Harrison Fraser has not played the tour in ages, so I'm gonna put
so
my.
You're not putting him. Okay. So of those, who do you got finishing highest out here?
Harrison for sure. Yeah.
All right. I'm looking at. I'm going Willie Mack. I don't know why his name stuck out. I think finds lightning in a bottle this week and finishes highest of that crew.
Oh, okay. You mean highest is in best?
Or oh,
highest
no, score? Sorry.
No, I mean like I was best. Going the other way.
Oh,
I was
yeah,
going
no.
the other way.
Yeah, no, yeah. I would assume Harrison Frazier has the worst. I just mean who's going to play the best.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Stadler is above all those guys. So is KJ Troy and William McGirt.
This is a crazy field. Like,
yeah, this is quite the field. This reminds me of that the Bermuda
Championship. Yes, exactly.
So many guys in here that like.
Dude, nobody wants to go to Detroit.
and it's I know why. This golf course is literally one side's the nice part of the town, and one side's the literal, ghetto as they call it. So I guess we're not picking players, we're just going to move on, and Scott's not going to even pick who he thinks of that group is going to go lowest. LPGA's in Texas, the Volunteer of America's championship. The final rankings for the Olympics came out for the women. Nice to see Mel Reid on team England. Des talked about that being a big goal for him this year and for Mel, so that's gonna be awesome. I did ask him, do they get a medal? Do the caddies get medals if the player wins? He said no.
So nope, they do not. And it was neat too. And I texted him about that, and we were chatting a little bit about the fact it was happening. I mean, obviously he had the chance to go to Rio and go down there and caddy. So he said he was more excited for Mel because he knew how much it meant for her. So I think he's just stoked, not just to be at his second Olympics, but the fact that Mel's going in as the leading player from England and obviously has a strong chance to medal as well.
Just two Olympics, last two, where like there's the storyline coming in is not the Olympics, unfortunately. Last one was Zika, remember? Like that was a big thing going on. And now obviously COVID and the golfers aren't really going to be able to hang out with everybody, and they're going to be in their own little bubble, and which it's probably going to feel more like an LPGA event and a PGA Tour event for a lot of them. It's kind of not going to have that same experience, which I feel bad for a lot of these people.
Yeah. And there's, one storyline that's right there. And I tweeted about it last week was one of Brooke Henderson's really good friends from when she was a kid qualified for the swim team for Team Canada. And these two girls grew up together and they're going to be both Olympians representing Canada and Smith Falls. And really, they're not going to be able to see each other much at all. So that's kind of disappointing because, any of the athletes that you talk to, that experience of the athlete village going to support other teams, other sports, other athletes, opening, closing ceremonies, all those different things are really what the games are about. I mean, it's about bringing the world together. And if all of a sudden they're just going there for the sake of just the competition and then they're out, that's just a weird environment. And even on the golf side of it, men's competitions first, women's comes afterwards. So even for Team Canada, for an example, Derek Ingram is the national team coach from a men's side. He'll go in there, he'll go over with Mackenzie Hughes and Corey Connors, and then Brett Saunders, who's actually going to be accompanying the women. He's actually Elena Sharp's personal coach. He'll come later. So he doesn't even get to go early, kind of be a part of that same environment, even though they're going to be at this exact same golf course. So, it's definitely isolated. It definitely doesn't have the same feel, but I'm sure they're just happy to be representing their country and chance to be an Olympian.
For sure, for sure. Why don't we hit the mailbag, Scotty? A little slower episode. We're tired. We're sunburned. Yeah. We're old. We're going to wrap up this episode a little bit earlier this week. So let's grab a quick break, quick message from our sponsor, and then we'll hit the mailbag.
At Ping, we're an engineering company. Success is measured in the lab and on your scorecard. We focus on results. Your results. In the G425 Max Driver, that means more time in the fairway, less time in the rough. It means longer drives, shorter approach shots, and fewer putts. The new G425 drivers, taking MOI to the max. Get fit today.
Visit ca.ping.com to learn more about G425.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back to the mailbag as well. Thanks, everyone, for getting the questions in very quickly this week. Had a lot of them flood right in there, and we really appreciate that. Let's get started here. Putting lesson or new putter?
Putting lesson is going to be cheaper than a new putter and probably going to make you a better putter. So I'm going to go with that one.
It's far too logical, isn't it? So,
What's a new putter these days? Like a decent model is like $300 minimum right now.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, even for, our tournament on the weekend, I think, the second highest prize in one of the categories was a putter because the value of them now. So you're probably right. I mean, in most cases, everybody goes searching around for a new putter all the time. They think that's going to be the fix. That doesn't fix poor technique, unfortunately. So
that being said, like you and I have how many putters combined?
Too many.
Between the two of us, like at least in the 20s.
Yeah, but how long do you keep a putter in your bag normally? Like how long does it stay in there?
It's funny because a lot of them, I'm looking at them, they're very similar. Like there are a lot of similar models and they have like different ones, just slightly different. So it's like, I would need like, you know, a good week of missing like the short ones to be like, okay, I need a change. Where it's like those 4-footers, 5-footers that just aren't going in, that usually go in. And then, it depends. Like I've had a putter that sat in there for years. I've had a putter that went in for a month and then another one for a month. But I like to mix it up. But right now, the one that I have, I felt like I was making a lot of 5-footers, 6-footers over the last couple of weeks. So it'll probably stay for a while.
So are you a permanent change guy where you all of a sudden you used a putter for a while, you're putting poorly, and then you jump to another putter and you stick with that? Or are you the kind of guy that goes, oh, I'm playing poorly, I'm going to take that old putter that I liked before, put it back in the bag for
get
a feel for it, and then maybe switch back to the one that you're using or whatever the case?
No, if it's hot, it stays in. Yeah, okay. I go back. Right. I got my favorite one. I haven't used it this year. I have a Scotty Coronado. And I'm pretty lights out with it. And it's not in right now. I'm fine doing something different. I don't need to get into it with it. But yeah, that's one where I know if this one goes sour for a while, I'm going back to that one for a bit.
I always find it horrifying almost when I see people that are, you know, they have a bad putting week and they sell off the putter and then it's gone.
No, sorry.
Yeah. You're going to have regret over that, I'm sure. I mean, it's going to have to be on my shelf for a long while before I consider going, all right, it's time to get rid of that.
Yeah, especially if it's like for example, like Scotties are usually, you know, they hold their value. They stick around for a long time. But there's like certain brands where they'll come out with the similar model, for example, in a couple of years, you can kind of get that again. So like I've had, for example, I've had a couple Spiders in my time. I've had a couple different Odysseys in my time that they still come out. They're kind of their standard putter. So, you know, maybe I've sold off a couple of those and regretted it, but at the same time, you know, the ones that, you know, they're unique quotation marks. Those ones stick around. Yeah. At this point, it's not worth it. It's not worth it to go searching. Cause if you want it back, go find that putter again. It makes it so much more difficult.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Get a lesson.
And I would say though, I think the script has flipped a little bit. You used to always get people that would just, you know, change putters, but I'm hearing more and more people now. And I had a discussion with somebody yesterday who, you know, loves the putter that they're with, and they're come to the realization that maybe they're doing something poorly in what they're doing. So I think there's more of them now. And that's probably because there's been more emphasis on putting instruction in the last number of years, where there really wasn't that before. There was really like two or three elements that people would sort of focus on, and they would say, oh, well, you know, there's not much to it from an instruction standpoint, so I better just change my putter. So, but I think that's changing. So I'm with you. Let's go for the lesson. But, you know, a fresh wand every once in a while is not a bad thing. So, all right. On to the next one here. If you had to choose working in the pro shop or on the maintenance team at the golf course.
I'm a pro shop guy. I always enjoyed it. I worked pro shop at one point in my life. And I enjoyed it. I liked the early mornings. There used to be all the old dudes that would come in. I think I told the story on the podcast. The one guy, he stopped playing at one point. He said, you know, I'm a little sore. He was ancient. And he used to come, he'd walk with his buddies. They always teed off right early. And he would come in. I always had to give him like a bag because he would go and collect the mushrooms off the golf course. And he knew what ones you could eat and couldn't.
Right.
And it's stories like that. I enjoyed it. The stuff I didn't enjoy the pro shop is the phone calls that you got. But that's probably, I hope if you're a good golf course, you've kind of, you know, gotten past that where it's almost all online. You don't have to worry about a lot of that stuff now, or at least at that level. But I enjoy it. I like the conversation aspect behind it.
Right. And I would back that up. I mean, I would, you know, I worked pro shop for a while. I worked golf. My first golf job was on the maintenance side of it. I would say it really depends if you're willing to hear the complaints, because that's what you're going to hear in the shop. You are definitely the outlet for people when they come in and have an issue on the golf course. If you're willing to deal with that, then that's perfectly fine. Whereas out on the golf course, you can get those early mornings, jump on a mower, go do your thing. Generally, you're not going to get disturbed by too many people, except for maybe somebody hitting the golf ball your way or something like that, and then get on with your day and not have to listen to complaints. So I was torn with this one. I'm going to nudge a little bit over to the maintenance side of it, which would probably surprise some people. But I've worked both sides of it. And I would just say, you know, when you're younger, it's probably okay to sit in that shop and maybe deal with, you know, a few people here and there. But after you've heard the same complaints over and over again, it might get a little tiring for sure. All right. Do you think Nelly Korda would make a cut on a PGA Tour event? I'm not sure this is a good question or not. But
I actually like it. Obviously, people are going to say that, you know, oh, her driving, you know, she's not going to hit the ball as far as the other guys. Well, she's right in the mix distance-wise with Brendan Todd, who won, what, 3 times in a year? Like, literally. And their golf courses on the PGA Tour are usually harder. Like physically, the ground, it's usually harder than it is on the LPGA. So right in there with, you know, the Brendan Todds, the David Hearns, Mark Hubbard, you know, right in that mix of that 275 off the tee, which is what is going to be a huge thing for her. Problem is the accuracy, though, is where she's not really known for. The rough does get a little bit longer on the PGA Tour. The way she's playing right now, I would be betting yes. I don't know. Like, I think this type of week, like the Rocket Mortgage would be like a great spot for that kind of test for her.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think maybe you'll see, like you said, the setup will be a little different with PGA Tour event. You might see thicker rough in some situations. It's going to depend on the tournament more than anything. It depends on green conditions, firmness, things like that. I wouldn't doubt, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, she would make the cut, but the thing is, I guess, is that would she want to play in it if she didn't think she was going to contend more than anything?
Yeah, it's a losing right. situation unless she's contending. Yeah.
So I think it becomes critical, you know, for people if all of a sudden she goes and she finishes, you know, T40 or whatever. But, you know, to address the question as it is, do you think she'd make a cut? 100%. I have no doubt that she has the skills and the ability to do it. Based on her scoring ability, the shots that she hits. Yeah, you're right. She might have to pick the right fit, but that goes the same for everybody else on the PGA Tour. I mean, Kevin Kisner has said, you know, there's certain golf courses that fit him. Brendan Todd, just to talk about, certain golf courses are going to fit him. So could she make it? Yeah, for sure. I wouldn't doubt against it. That's for sure. All right. I have not played in any golf tournaments. I'm nervous about it. Any advice? Well, you just played in a tournament.
Yeah, and I was not going to contend at any point ever in any of the
flights.
You
made the cut.
Yeah, there you go. I actually looked at it. If we actually had a cut after day one, I was not making the cut.
Uh-oh.
Maybe it was. I should actually go through again. I might have made the cut. I'll have to look at that again.
By flight, maybe.
By flight, I made the cut, but after day one. But I don't know. Like, I have to look. I think it was looking tight once I finished up. I was worried. I was worried that you're going to send me a text without a tee time for Sunday. My thoughts are, I said earlier, nobody cares what you shot, right? Yeah. Like, I think you think people care. I bet you nobody knows what I shot on Sunday. And I'll tell you, it was a 93. It was not good. I shot a 50 on the front nine. Guess who cares? Nobody cares.
Nobody.
If it was,
I only knew that because you texted me after 4 holes and said,
go look at the scoreboard.
Go look at the scoreboard. Yeah. I'm having a day. Yeah. It was like 4, 5, 6, 8. Oh, you missed the 7.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. It was looking good. 50 on the front nine. I haven't done that in years.
No.
And nobody cares. And I don't care. And if totally. That's what you, if you want to try the competition side, it's fun. There's two guys
I know them, a good
group because they had a over under that you posted on the on your story of like, will they break 105? And no, they did not. Like, I think they shot 113, 110. They probably had the most fun of anybody out there. So like, that's all that matters. It's the idea of playing by the rules and like getting the ball in the hole, and who cares? Yeah, go do it.
Yeah.
That's my advice.
It's bury your ego. Go for the experience and just enjoy it. And you're right. Tyler McDonald and Carlos Verdi, who are at the end of the group, Yeah,
they were just sweeping the next day.
They were, but I mean, I went to see them on hole 17 on their last day, and they were laughing and, you know, helped them out with a rules situation they didn't understand. They're like, oh, I can play it out of a lateral. Oh, okay, all right, that helps. And they were just having a good time. And, they both taken up the game of golf recently. Just wanted that experience and see what it's like. And I thought they were great. Yes, were they nervous? Sure they were. But guess what? They were just as nervous as the A-flight players were, because they were nervous too. Everybody's going to be nervous. You have expectations of yourself or whatever. But once you get in there and just enjoy it, you'll see that, you know, it's just a different way to play golf. And like you said, you got to put the ball in the hole. You got to mark a score down. That's a little bit different. You get comfortable with that. So I would say dive in, do it. Bury your ego. Don't really care one way or the other. Yes, you want to play well, but don't think
that. Sometimes you don't.
Sometimes you don't. And just just understand that, as Stefan said, you know what? People might look at it for a minute, but a week from now, they're not going to remember it at all. You've got the experiences to take away from it. All right. What element is missing now that you would like to see in golf broadcast to make it more interesting? Ooh, I like this one.
They experimented with it, but I don't think they're ever going to do it again. I don't think players are going to do it. I love the mic'd up stuff. I think that's the key. I think they're going to get to the point where everything, they'll be literally every group, you're going to be able to see every shot. That's with the betting side of things, just so they can get in line with that. Like, there's so much money there from a casino standpoint to be able to bet on every single shot. Will they hit the green from here? Yada, 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 and be able to watch that type of stuff. And I think having the mic'd up verge aspect would be amazing, but I think, you know, players aren't going to do it. There's things that have been said. We don't need to go down that road again. Yep. So I just don't see that that happening, but that's what I loved it. I just love silence. I love when they stop speaking, the broadcast, to let the moment take over. And if like that's within their control, right? I feel like, you know, Jim Nance is known for his one-liners after a tournament or whatever, right? And that he wrote on Saturday night in his book. He has them all written out. Like, why can't we just have silence? Like a moment of just like let the experience happen. We don't get that enough in golf.
Yeah, and if it's TV, there's pictures there, so let it play out. So my take on that is very similar to yours. I definitely like the hearing the audio. What I would like to see, though, I think would make it interesting, would be a caddy cam. So it would be a body cam on a caddy and what's going on from their perspective, looking down in the bag, what they're doing at different situations, their perspective as far as view is concerned. I think that would be interesting. And you know, anybody that's caddied, and obviously we have, you know, lots of discussions about this, there's a cool perspective that happens as a caddy of where you're at and who you're talking to. And, you know, when you're doing, you know, signals to the TV crew there's lots of stuff that happens that people don't see that, you know, you're taking care of. And I mean, yeah, it's not going to be great when, you know, you're just watching a guy get snacks out of a bag.
Or when you're like, you had to use the washroom, you got to run to catch up. Those are fun holes.
No, exactly. All you hear is heavy breathing and gloves knocking together. Exactly.
114 plus five. Yeah. I can't do the math right now. You got to figure it out.
Exactly. But I think, you know, if they're going to provide another element that could be interesting, I think that could be it. So
not bad. I like it.
All right. If you had to choose, play golf in the wind or rain. Well, I guess you had to do both on the weekend. So which day did you prefer?
Oh, I prefer the wind. Wind's fun. You got to think, and who cares? Like, if a ball goes flying, it's, you know, you got to try different things that you would never have to try. And the rain just sucks.
Yeah.
You're just wet. There's no fun aspect about playing in the rain. You're just wet. You got two gloves on. Your grips are wet. Your bag is wet. Your phone is wet.
You're just uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, exactly. The feet. Oh, I forgot that. Like, your shoes. Nothing of fun about it. If you got to pick, give me the wind. Because everybody's dealing with the wind, right? Like, some people are better with the rain, some people are better with the wind, but like, at least I feel like it makes a better playing field with big wind than rain.
Yeah, and I think the wind, while it is obviously inconsistent, I think it's somewhat more predictable. In other words, you can try to outplay the wind and figure out how to get around the golf course, shots that you have to take. With rain, there's so much randomness. I mean, there's no friction between a golf ball and a club face, and balls go shooting up and out of rough, and all sorts of different things could happen. The ground gets muddy. So I think that randomness is more frustrating more than anything. Whereas I think with the wind, even though, you know, you might underestimate it on a one hole or a shot or something like that, at least you can sort of try to outmaneuver it a little bit. Whereas I think rain, you just can't beat it. Unfortunately, you can't get past it. And it ends up resulting in maybe tournaments or events that are shots that are, you know, determined a lot more by luck than skill. So I think I'd stick with the wind as well. All right, last one here. Apparently this is one for me, but certainly you can answer it as well. What's the number one equipment issue you see on the lesson tee?
Yeah, you're looking at me going, what? Nobody has chippers. That's my answer.
What do you think it is without looking at the notes?
Oh, I mean, at the end, like clubs that probably just aren't fit for them, you know, grips that are destroyed that they haven't updated in years. I mean, it's this stuff that I just know from my own standpoint. But yeah, I would just,
it's a laundry list. It really is.
So many, but I would just, my guess, 9 times out of 10, you end up working with, generally speaking, the better players. So I doubt you're dealing with poor fits, but sometimes with the better player, they almost fit themselves a lot and they think they need something that they don't. But what's the actual answer, Scott?
Yeah, one of the things that I see is a continual problem, especially in the last number of years or so, where we start to see launch monitors come into fitting situations, is I see players showing up at the tee with not enough loft in their driver. And one of the reasons, especially if you have discussions with people and talk to them and ask them why that happens or why they get into that loft, is that with less loft, you're going to get slightly higher ball speeds. And what's happening is people are going for fittings. They're going, and who knows where they're going. It could be random spots. I'm not going to blame one person over another. But if all of a sudden you take somebody and you give them a 8.5 degree driver versus a 10.5 degree driver, and let's not look purely at the distance that they get, which it could be overall distance as far as they could be maxing out that way, but their carry distance is less, but their ball speed is a little bit higher. They can press the golf ball a little bit more. So all of a sudden, it's really easy if you're a fitter to sit there and go, oh, hey, your ball speed's, you know, 4 miles an hour faster when we do this club and, you know, this loft configuration. But they're not playable. And that's the issue. The person basically doesn't have the ability to carry the ball what they want it to. It can have a greater effect on shot direction as well. So basically, driver loft is the number one thing. It's not the driver fit so much, and it can be. Obviously, people get in different models that don't have a proper trajectory and things like that. But certainly seeing some loft situations where people are showing up and you're going, you know what? We can actually get almost the exact amount of carry and the same amount of distance, but it's going to be more playable if we just give you a little bit more loft and increase your launch window a little bit. And basically what happens is that they get so little loft on there and getting so little spin that if they're off center by any bit, the ball is just falling out of the air or going sideways in a hurry. So when you're getting fit for that driver, make sure it's playable as far as the yardage is concerned, if you mishit it, not just when you hit it well.
Yeah, I had one, I think early last year, maybe 2 years ago, I was just trying to get like distance. And exactly. I ended up like an 8.5 and then added the higher launching shaft to kind of counteract it with low spin. When I hit it well, I got the most distance, but not like 50%. I'm hitting these duck hooks that just like, not even straight duck hooks, but just like drop out of the sky. Diving, they're not, they're diving because it literally had no spin on it. Yeah. With my swing speed, it wasn't going to work. I needed way more swing speed to make that work. So I agree. Great tip. Could have saved people a lot of money in the long run. Well, that's it, I think, Scotty.
It is.
Any final thoughts for the mailbag?
No, it was sorry about that. A half awake here, falling asleep. No, thanks everyone for sending the mailbag questions. Keep sending them in. Like I said, serious, fun, hypothetical, ridiculous. Keep them coming. No wrestling questions this week. So sorry, Brad Lawrence, but I'm glad we took care of that one for you last week. But
I haven't heard from him since I said we could beat him and whoever in a matchup.
He's shying away now. Yeah. Everybody's got their head down now that the golf season is really grinding in there. But yeah, people keep those mailbag questions coming and we really enjoy them. It's a great segment and, you know, 7 questions in there this week, but certainly we can expand it out a little bit more if the questions are interesting. So keep passing them along.
Well, we got one more thing. We're going to wrap it up. We got another tip of the week, as always, Scotty. What are we going to talk about today and where can they find it as per usual?
Yeah, we're going to have it up on the TikTok podcast Instagram. And it's the tip of the week is about ball position. Now, a lot of people talk about ball position and its importance in the swing. A lot of different elements to it. I'm going to attack one in particular, one problem that people constantly have with ball position and how it affects other parts of their golf swing and keeps them from optimizing their golf game. And I think people will see a lot of themselves in it when they hear or see the tip.
All right, we're back for another tip here on the Tee Talk podcast. Today, I want to talk a little bit about golf ball position in the swing. Obviously, a lot of people look at this as a fundamental in the golf swing. It really is a preference. You can do a lot of things in a golf swing to work your way around a golf ball position and get an effective shot, but we want to do some things in our golf swing that allow the ball position to really help us more than anything. So the big common mistake that I see for a lot of people, especially people that are trying to help the golf ball in the air, initially, is I see people taking golf swings and the club bottoms out before the golf ball, which tends to be an issue. Obviously, we hit behind the golf ball, don't apply energy to the golf ball, not great. So, what they do to kind of compensate for that, a lot of people, instead of changing their body movement, they also change their ball position. They tend to put their ball position back. So on the lesson tee, we see a lot of people show up and with ball positions that are back in their stance. It allows them to sort of hit down, make good contact, take a lot of loft off, hit a little bit of a lower shot. The only problem is they change what they're doing with their golf swing to adapt for the ball position. So here's the mistake that people make. They get a ball position that's a little too far back. It allows them to hit that lower shot and take the loft off, but as a result of it, they don't move their chest and sternum in the golf swing. And what happens is they don't really get a complete motion in their swing, and they tend to get some other problems because of that ball position. They may get the lower ball flight, they may make good contact, but it's only because they've made up for a lot of other things with the way they're placing the ball. What will happen for a lot of those people is they'll tend to get a path that goes a little bit too far to the outside. And they can also get a club face that's working to the outside as well. So not good as far as getting a good start line and maybe controlling the curvature of the golf ball. So what I like to see instead is people look at their ball position, make sure it's not too far behind. In fact, if we're looking at something like a pitching wedge, we might be to middle to just ahead of middle. And the reason we're going to do that is in the golf swing, this is going to allow us to move forward in the golf swing, move our sternum forward, get down through the golf ball, get the dynamic loft off so that we can get the trajectory that we want, but at the same time line up the face and path so we don't get big curvatures or misses that go too far to the right or to the left. Also at the same time producing a better body motion, basically a motion that's working from one side to the other through the golf ball as opposed to working our way into a backswing and stopping at the golf ball. So big conception there that for a lot of people, they need that ball position back to be able to control the trajectory and get good contact. I'd say go the opposite of that. Put the ball position a little bit more forward. Learn to move your body properly to control your face and path and contact in a different way, and you'll be a better golfer for it.
Scotty, thanks again, as per usual. I know that's something I need to work on is my ball position with the driver. Got a few comments about that on the first tee at Equinel, and I was basically in front of my left foot. That was a get the ball over the water swing, people. That was a nervous swing. Got some chirps, just unnecessary.
Really?
Casey Ward, that one stung. Like, she's always so nice, and then just no teeing up in the drop zone, just like... Wow. Brad Lawrence saying it went 220 right down the pipe. That hurt.
I think Dave Byrne said, oh, that guy's going to snap hook it or something. I saw, so I don't know if you caught that one.
Didn't see that. Great. Yeah, it went, for the record, it went like 245. Okay.
Hey, you know what? And camera angle, you know, kind of fools people,
yeah,
sometimes,
it's definitely
right?
Fooled. Yeah. And that's why camera, my knee, all about the camera angle too. There's a camera angle. If you saw it, I was posed right over that leg. I got so many comments about that. Like, oh, power knee. He was like, I got like half an ACL in here. Like, give me a break. Oh man,
you're gonna chase him off Instagram, people. Don't bully him. Come on.
Yeah, this is bullying. This is cyberbullying on my own Instagram account. I hate it. Oh, it's fun. It's all good. Let's leave it there. Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you Ping for sponsoring the episode. Scotty, thank you again for a great week at the Flagstick Open. And Jeff and everybody for the crew at Flagstick. Thank you to our guests this week. Thank you to Brendan for editing the podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We apologize for Scotty's mic. Couple issues there, but
hey, yeah, I'm not sure where that's
going. His mic's tired, too. You know, everything's tired at Scott's house. We're all tired. So we'll leave it there. We'll be back next week, and we look forward to chatting with you then.